It's the MicroConf Podcast, and in this tactics episode, we pull audio from my MicroConf talk in New Orleans in 2025. This is about breaking through the seven SaaS plateaus. So I did a bunch of research with tiny seed graphs and actually across all of my investments, any SaaS graph I could get my hands on, and looked at all of the causes, tried to figure out all the causes for plateaus, and I could only find seven. And in this talk, I enumerate those and then talk about how to identify if you are hitting that plateau and some thoughts about ways to get around it. So this is from the talk I gave at MicroConf New Orleans last March. And if you're interested in coming to MicroConf US in 2026, that's in Portland, Oregon, from April 12th through the 14th. Ticket prices right now are as low as they will ever be. And we have sold out our last four events. Ticket prices will go up on October 22nd or when the first 100 tickets have sold. If you're planning to come, you should get your tickets now, microconf.com/US, and use the code ROB50, that's ROB50, for $50 off your ticket. In addition, MicroConf Remote is coming up. That's November 5th. It is our online-only event. It's very inexpensive, and we are aiming it at early-stage folks around shipping and validating fast and finding your first customers. The recordings from the event will be available for ticket holders. And when you show up live, you can ask questions of the speakers. After the talks, we'll have our founder-by-founder session, which is like a digital version of our hallway track. To get all the info and snag your ticket, head to microconf.com/remote and use promo code STARTUPS15 for $15 off. And with that, let's dive into the seven SaaS plateaus and how to break through.
Plateaus are the death of SaaS. Well, churn is the death of SaaS, but churn causes plateaus. I went through Tiny Seed. We have 192 investments, so I have 192 MRR graphs. And so I started flipping through. I went through literally every one of them, and I tried to find plateaus that people broke through. And then I reached out to the founders in Slack, and then I said, hey, what caused this plateau, and then how did you get through it? Now, the bad news, I think I'll try to only say this once because it is kind of sad. I always knew the plateaus were really brutal to get through. What I learned going through the 192 Tiny Seed companies is that it was about 85 or 90% of folks who did plateau never made it through their plateau. I mean, it's really grim. So as I was going through these, I learned some stuff from this, right? Because I always have a hypothesis of like, ooh, plateaus, XYZ, hey, they're hard to get through. But as I went through all these revenue graphs, I learned, number one, these seven apply after you have some type of emerging product market fit. So think about this as like, you know what? I'm already at 10, 20, 30K MRR minimum up into the millions of ARR. That's where this talk applies. The solutions are obvious. I think I already said that. Usually it's like, hey, you're plateaued because you don't have enough leads. Well, what's the solution? Get more leads, right? The solutions are obvious. It's not going to be helpful. The helpful part is being able to identify if you're in the plateau, if that's the reason for it. And then to hear an example of another founder who struggled with it and got through it. As I already said, predicting and avoiding a plateau is much better than hitting it because the numbers are, they're not great, at least in my sample size of, you know, just under 200. And the other interesting thing was, of the six examples I'm going to give you, three of them are actual plateaus someone hit and made it through, and three of them are we saw a plateau coming. ProfitWell kept telling us we were going to plateau, and we made this change and avoided it. And that's also good, right? So just before we dive in to these seven, the SaaS plateau equation. How much new MRR are you adding in a given month? I know it's not consistent. I know it's not the exact same number every month. But let's say you're adding, well, we do an example. You're adding $3,000 of MRR, and your monthly revenue churn is 5%. 3,000 divided by 0.05, you will, math dictates that you will plateau at 60K of MRR. And likewise, since it's just a linear equation, if you cut your churn in half, right, to 2.5%, 120K MRR, that's it. If you're adding 2.5% churn is not the worst, right? And 3% MRR, I'm sorry, $3,000 of MRR, also not the worst, but that's it. You have a $1.4 million business, and unless you change the fundamentals of these through, you know, there's a bunch of different levers to pull to change churn and to change new MRR. Unless you change that, that's your business. You're going to plateau. Predict it. Avoid it. All right. Seven SaaS plateaus. Oh, and the other thing I'm going to say, the first four are the most common. And then the latter three are almost a, they're just a lot less common, right? So they're a subset or a lower category of it. So the first one's a leaky funnel. What is a leaky funnel? So I'm not including churn in your funnel. There's a separate one for churn. Leaky funnel is, hey, you know, someone hears about you, then maybe they sign up for a trial, then they do they convert or not, that type of stuff. So that's the funnel. So what does this look like? How do you know if you have a leaky funnel? How do I know if my funnel's the problem or if I don't have enough leads or if my churn is too high, right? I define a leaky funnel as something that's not in these ranges. These are my rule of thumb ranges. If you have a trial, and this is for low touch, there's a whole other set for high touch, but a low touch funnel, trial requires a credit card. You can go to sasplaybook.com/resources, and that's literally the one on the right is a screenshot from the website. This is in SAS Playbook. If you have a copy, 10 bucks on Kindle. I won't read through these numbers here, but if you're within these ranges generally, your funnel's probably okay. You probably don't need to really spend a lot of time on it. I mean, there's some exceptions, but like this is a general guideline. This is why when I posted on Twitter one time about rules of thumb and how important they are, whether in SaaS or anything else, and someone said, bullshit, there are no rules of thumb. That's common knowledge, and common knowledge is da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, no, having a rule of thumb generally, if I started another SaaS tomorrow and I had a credit card up front and my trial to paid was 20%, I know that that's the weakest part of my funnel. I know it from experience. I know it from looking at a bunch of companies. So you can at least take this, you know, this loose thing and realize, if I'm within these, I'm probably doing okay. And if I'm below these, I probably need to work on this first. And this is one of the most common. High churn and leaky funnel are the two that I see the most common. All right, so the cause is a leaky funnel. What do you do? Of course, you fix your funnel, you troubleshoot your funnel, you start at the bottom. There's a whole process here I don't have time to go into because I only have 4 minutes per point here. But the example I'm going to give you today is Scraping Bee. I got permission from all of these founders. Is Pierre in here? Pierre, there you are, in the way in the back. So Scraping Bee, highly successful SaaS company. Last time they were public about MRR, I think they were at 2 or 3, I think. Million of ARR. I'm sorry, not MRR. They've been building in public. So Pierre said, I said, hey, you know, why did you plateau and why do you think it was a leaky funnel? And Pierre said, we're selling a commodity, and we were between 50 and 100% more expensive than competition on some dimension, which was concurrency. So, I like the fact that he was just like, we're selling a commodity. Like, how many people would admit that? It's kind of cool. So once we were able to offer the same kind of price thanks to new infrastructure, we almost doubled our number of new customers per month overnight. So they were losing. People were signing up and then just bailing, right, in the middle of the funnel. Lowering the price didn't allow us to overcome a plateau per se, but it sure allowed us to avoid it as we were close to the churn equals new MRR phase. That's the equation I had earlier in the talk, right? We offered way more for the same price, haven't touched the nominal price of the plan, but increased what each plan had to offer. So this is another clever way to raise pricing. I did this twice with Drip, where I really liked our price points with Drip. $49, $99, $149, $199 and up. And if we just lowered the number of subscribers you got per plan, we effectively had people upgrading quicker. And that's what Pierre is saying, is you just kept the same pricing because you liked the round number. You didn't want to go to 59 and 159, like this awkward pricing. You just kind of lower. So that's how they raised pricing. And so this is MRR graph. I removed, by request for everyone, I removed the date and the actual MRR, ARR on the left. But I will say everyone that I show in this talk is mid six figures into seven figures. So that gives you an idea. None of these are not like 10K MRR companies, right? So avoided a plateau by fixing their funnel. Number two, as I've referenced, high churn. So what does high churn look like? This is a screenshot from the PDF of the SaaS playbook. This is how I define it. Now, here's the thing. It's gross churn, not net churn. There's a whole, we can dive into a whole thing. This is revenue churn, not logo churn. If you are an enterprise sales company doing a lot of annual stuff, you should probably be almost two points below this at any given point. I saw someone post to X Twitter today and said, I have 9% monthly churn. Is that good or is that very bad? And I say that is not good based on this definition. Almost catastrophic. So this is how you know. You literally come to this and say, I'm 2-3%. All right, I'm okay. If I have 2-3% churn and I'm not enterprise sales, I'm probably doing all right. I'm not doing the worst. And so the solution, if you have high churn. You have high churn. So here's the problem is the solution that I see some people doing is like, I'm not growing. I just need more leads. And I'll look and I'll say, let's look through your funnel. Let's look at your, wait, you're churning at 9-10% a month. You don't need more leads. You can't possibly outrun your churn. It's too much. You're turning over your whole customer base every 8 months. This is not a subscription business at all. You haven't built a subscription business. It's on fire. So the idea of adding more leads tends to be the whack-a-mole or the fix-all, right? Everyone thinks if I have more leads, it fixes everything. It doesn't. Not if you have the fundamentals of your business are not working. Not if your churn is too high. And that is why I'm giving this talk. So you can say, oh, if I'm at 7% churn, I should probably work on that. And if I'm at 2% churn, I should probably know that I'm in a good spot here. So there's a couple things you can do to get around churn. It is a huge topic. I think I've given entire talks on it. There's an entire chapter of the book. It's a lot to say. So sometimes it depends on why people are churning. Sometimes people are churning because, oh, you're missing this feature, this checkbox feature. We'll get into that a little later. Competition, right? So you can build missing features, but realistically, the way I see it more often is that you stop serving high churn prospects or customers. Oftentimes you have two types of customers, three types of customers. You have folks who are paying you more, who churn low, who sometimes are net negative churn, who stick around for a long time, who really aren't that much of a pain in the ass. And then you have the prosumer, B2C-ish, the folks who are kind of dabbling in it, who are paying you less, who are the most headache, who churn the highest, right? And trying to figure out how the ICP is different from that is the challenge here. And in that case, you're essentially kind of moving up market. Even if you don't raise your prices, you often will just cancel your lowest plan, right? If you have a $19 plan and then a bunch of other plans upstream, that $19 plan is usually going to churn higher and be a lot more demand, have a lot more demand. So we saw Jordan Gall do this with Carthook. If you go back and reference how he had a velvet rope policy, because they were doing $49 a month and up. And at a certain point, he said, minimum plan is $300 a month, and everyone has to do a demo with me. And it pissed off a bunch of prospects. And you didn't if you were a brand new Shopify store, you didn't qualify. And they would turn you away. And people were like miffed, like, why can't I do this? And he said, because our churn is catastrophic. Their churn, I don't remember what it was, 8 or 9% probably. But he knew that they wanted to grow to a multi-million dollar business. And so he literally stopped serving the bottom end of the market. We saw Gather do this in season 2 of Tiny Seed Tales, where their bottom plan was $29 a month when they joined Tiny Seed. And we said, this is not a viable business. You're doing one demo to close. $29 a month is completely unsustainable. And by the end of the season, I think they were at $200 or $250 a month as their bottom end. So it took them 18 months to move up market. They had a bunch of missing features. They were trying to cater to architecture firms that had like 10 people instead of one. And that's a whole thing. So moving up market is another way to do this. And the example I have of this is Marty at JBoard, which is SaaS. If you wanted to start a job board, that's what JBoard does. And so Marty says, at JBoard, we never actually hit a plateau. All right, I told you half of them wouldn't hit a plateau. But our analytics software consistently predicted a decline in MRR due to high churn. After analyzing our trial users, we identified two distinct groups. So they had solopreneurs, wannapreneurs, drawn by our affordable pricing, and more established businesses that showed initial interest, but ultimately didn't convert due to missing key features. So Marty pinpointed and implemented these critical features for larger customers. They managed to almost double their pricing while maintaining conversion rates of their funnel coming in. And this allowed us to overcome the projected decline and continue growing even in a high churn market segment. And JBoard is doing very, very well. So he did basically the playbook of what I was saying, which is kind of like at a certain point, you do have to focus on that ICP of the folks who are sticking around and paying you a lot. Usually they're the least headache anyways. And so that's his revenue curve. Again, all mid-six-figure and seven-figure businesses. Okay, so we're 2 of 7. Again, the first 4 are by far the most common and by far the most important for you to know. All right, third one is not enough leads. Actually, not enough leads. This is the one that most people jump to first. And I'm going to say the reason I put it third is that usually it's funnel or churn and not enough leads. But how do you know when it's not enough leads? Well, again, going back to the churn or to the funnel, and the churn. If your churn's okay, if your churn is good or great, and if your funnel metrics are within these numbers, and you're still not growing, well then, yeah, you need more leads, right? And I can't just tell you how many leads do you need, because it depends on your price point, right? If you're selling $10,000 a month software, well, you need a lot fewer leads than if you're selling $10, $50 a month software. So usually, again, I come back to my rules of thumb. So if you're within these and you're still not growing, probably need to drive more traffic, drive more leads. That's why I include these rules of thumb, folks. example of this is Kieran at Flatplan, and this is one that actually, these are enterprise sales. This is one that actually did plateau. Look at that. Brutal. And that's long. I don't remember if that was like 9 months. I mean, it's a long time he was plateaued. And so Kieran told me, before we joined TinySeed, we were heavily reliant on inbound direct referrals from one large partner and some SEO. The TinySeed marketing playbook call did a great job of breaking down the channels we had to experiment with, following the three-factor framework of speed, cost, and scalability. We found that the fast marketing approaches just didn't work for us, right? So cold outreach is relatively fast, pay-per-click's relatively fast. Three-factor framework, again, it's in the SES playbook. That's why I wrote it in the chapter. It's just a way to decision make around what marketing approaches you should try. So Kieran said, I accepted it'd be a slog. And I love that sentence. I want, if entrepreneurs had money, we would print, that would be the thing we would print on it. I accepted it would be a slog. He doubled down on slow and scalable. It was partnerships, organic search, PPC on LinkedIn, posting daily on LinkedIn, podcasts, and very recently, moving into events. Each of these is a genuine slog, and many of them you need to really hold your nerve on, especially if it's muddy in terms of tracking. I'm still a bottleneck, which is why I'm trying to hire a salesperson. And so this was a case where the funnel metrics were amazing, their retention was amazing, they closed a lot of deals, and they just needed more leads. And so that's what they did. They expanded, and they're doing a bunch of slogging. That is almost the definition of SaaS, right? Okay, so the fourth of, as I said, you know, the fourth of the most common is competition. This is the hardest one to say, what does it look like? I don't have numbers. I know what it feels like to have competition eating your lunch. And it's when you keep hearing, well, we went with HubSpot because they have a CRM. Well, we went with MailChimp because they're 30% cheaper than you are. We went with Infusionsoft, said no one ever. But that's what it feels like. It feels like when you just keep hearing over and over, and it's either as you're getting started, where you're getting beat on deals, or you may have some semblance of product market fit. So product market fit is a moving target, and you can lose it. You can have it and lose it. There's a tiny seed company that's growing, doing really well, and then a big open source competitor came into the space and is completely free. And it started just pulling like crazy from his leads, and even people were churning and going over and using this tool that was about as good. And so competition, and he instantly knew. He said, I feel like I'm losing product market fit. Because again, product market fit. So his product was the same, but the market had shifted under his feet. That's why it's called product market fit. Most of us don't think about that. So what does it look like? There's a little bit of an intuition, but you kind of start feeling it. Like, why is this company growing so much faster? Why am I losing these deals to these other competitors? All right, so if you feel like you're losing it to competition, how do you figure this out? Well, this one's tough, right? It kind of depends. Sometimes it is, if it's an open source competitor, it's like, well, going back to our talk yesterday from Anthony about positioning, there was a, you know, how are you different? How do you become different than this open source competitor, right? How do you position yourself in a way that you have a differentiator? And we could, that talk yesterday was just an amazing, you know, kind of textbook example of how to figure this kind of thing out. The shitty part is if you're a SaaS founder and you bootstrap and you finally make it, and you're doing $500,000 ARR, you're doing $1 million, you're doing 1.5, everything's working, it can just stop working. If this happens, like competition is brutal. And whether it's a funded competitor who raises so much money that they can basically lose money and undercut your pricing by half, and they can just lose money for years, it sucks, but it happens, right? Or the open source competitor comes out or what have you. This is a very challenging part of being an entrepreneur, right? And so at that point, this is where you admit what's happening. And you go to, let's say, Anthony's talk, or you look at April Dunford's stuff, or you think, how do I now differentiate? How do I dig myself out? There's a little bit of a restart of like, I got to re-enter this market, thinking about it in a new way, if you still have the energy. So that's the kind of depends. The example I have here is UserList, Jane and Benedict, email marketing automation for SaaS growth. And that is their revenue. You can see they had a plateau there pretty hard, noticeable, and then they broke through it. And I asked Benedict, you know, what happened? And he said, I think that building and launching the visual workflows helped us break through that 2023 plateau. Since we launched that feature, we're growing again. My hunch is that it is such a table stakes feature at this point that not having it was causing people to dismiss user lists right away, even though our linear campaigns were pretty much powerful and covered most of the use cases. Oh, I want to go back. And here's the interesting thing. You know, user list has been around now for, I would guess, 7 years, 6 or 7 years. And I bet when they first launched, you didn't need a visual workflow builder to have decent product market fit, to have people coming and signing up and using it. But over time, the market shifts, and eventually, you plateau, and you got to build it. So am I telling a room of developers to go build features? No, not really. Like, I don't want to give you permission to just randomly build features. But sometimes, you know, talk to your customers first, too, before doing that. All right, so those are the four that I consider the most common by far. Now we're going to go to three more. Five, six, seven. Yeah, three more. So number five is one that I hear way too much. And this one's almost it's very, very rare that you have literally tapped your market out. That's usually bullshit. That's usually an excuse to not do the hard things and do more marketing and do more sales and figure out better product market fit. And usually it's like, man, I've tapped out the market, so I'm going to launch a second product. This is so common. I'm going to translate my app into Spanish to expand the market. So what does this look like? I'm trying to think of a single time I've actually seen this. Like, your market must be so tiny if you've tapped it out. I've talked about Jason and JD, who have Senior Place. They're a tiny seed company, and their market is small. It's single-digit thousands number of customers, right? And yet, they keep growing, and they're doing really well. Single-digit thousands of customers. Think about that. Is it possible to tap a market out? Yeah. And if I were to truly tap it out and know that I tapped it out, and I got five people to corroborate that information with me, and it wasn't just a founder gut thing, it's probably because I'm in a tight vertical, and I either need to go more horizontal or I need to add vertical. So if I'm catering to realtors right now, you know, what's next? Is it real estate attorneys? Is it mortgage brokers? Is it, you know, there's something next to it. You can add verticals. But be careful with this. This is way less common than people think. Expand vertically or horizontally. Great. I had a whole slide and I just talked over it. All right. So Postpone is the example. Postpone.app. When Grant came, he applied to Tiny Seed, and it was a Reddit post scheduler. And we said, we like you, Grant. You're smart. We want to make a bet on you. A Reddit post scheduler is not a 7 or 8 figure business. That's what we want to invest in. And he said, I'm going to add. I'm already on board with that, to add something aside from Reddit, right? So expand. And since then, he's added like 6, 7, 8. So he's added Blue Sky, Instagram Threads, Facebook, whatever. He's added a ton. And that was the thing of going from a single vertical before he plateaued, to be honest, or he had a light plateau, and then adding the verticals, and that got him up. So this is Grant's graph, and this is the plateau I'm talking about, which was about 6 months or more. Now, there's a second plateau up in the upper right. That's a whole other story. And I asked Grant, I said, do you want me to like cut off the graph? And he said, no, it's fine. Show the whole thing. And then gave me the cry face emoji. Because he's currently, I was like, I'm sorry, dude. He's currently in a, you know, in a plateau for other reasons, for not this. But doing this, expanding the verticals, allowed him to keep growing, right? He would have plateaued, that's like two years ago now. So to quote Grant, Grant says, I attribute breaking through the plateau to a couple reasons. One, raising prices by 25%. Hooray, MicroConf. And number two, focusing on supporting new verticals, right? New social platforms, which both increase signups and expansion revenue. Users would cancel their subscriptions to other scheduling apps to bring their non-Reddit accounts to Postpone and manage all of their social media under one roof. Number six, this one's a trip. Strong product market fit with one segment of a market. It looks like, what does it look like? It looks like it's completely opaque and non-obvious if you are not digging into who your best customers are, either through segmenting through metrics or having conversations. This is a matter of, all right, I have all these leads coming in, I have hundreds of customers, maybe thousands, depending on price point. And if you look at, it's like if you look at an Amazon rating of 3 stars, that could have 1,000 5-star and 1,000 1-star reviews, right? 3 stars actually obfuscates a bunch of information that's really important. And it's not until you dig into the 5s and the 1s and realize why people are giving it fives and ones. This is similar. If you're just looking at your customer base as your churn, as your average revenue per account, as your LTV, if you're just looking about that as an average across all your customers, you're looking at a 3-star review. It's once you segment, this is something I tell in every TinyC playbook. I think I said this in SaaS playbook too. Segment your customers either by pick a thing, do all the things. Get in a spreadsheet. Segment it by industry. Segment it by lead source. Segment it by price point that they pay you. And look at these metrics, because that's when you start to see 5 stars and 1 stars. And you'll start to see a group who is your, what's the opposite of an ICP? NIC, non-ideal customer profile? I don't know, I just coined a really bad acronym. There's the ideal customer profile and the worst, the WCP, the worst customer profile. You will see this, right? So what it looks like on the surface is, I don't know, I'm super confused. But if you dig into the fucking numbers, what it looks like is really obvious once you figure out what the ICP is, right? And this, I can't believe I put this slide in here. I now regret it. It's my next slide. Don't quote me on this. Don't take a photo of this. Sometimes it actually is to build features. That's not the only solution to this one, realistically. But if you have product market fit with one segment and not with another segment, it's either to build features to find product market fit with another segment, or it's to do the velvet rope thing that Jordan did, and it's just to not serve your not ideal customer profile, assuming the ideal customer profile is big enough and there's enough people. You know, I don't look at TAM. I look at TERM, which is total reachable market, how much in a given month, how many people are switching from other tools or are new and looking for your tools. And you can have a TAM of $1 billion, but if there's only 5 companies a month, I call that, the 5 would be the TERM, right? If 5 people a month looking for a tool, then you're not going to grow very quickly, right? So focusing on the folks who actually need your tool, whether it's to build features or whether it's to turn others away, is the real solution. Example of this is Monolith Forensics, case management for digital forensics. So Matt Danner says, I've been fortunate that I haven't had a real plateau, so he's one of the three, but I've noticed that we have at least 3 segments in our market where our product market fit is at varying levels. So he did the exercise I recommend. So one segment, we're going to call segment A, has high product market fit, but another segment, segment B, has lower product market fit. So segment A, if I recall, is governments and like government agencies and law enforcement. And segment B is like these private digital forensics labs. I didn't put them in there because it made it all complicated, but you get the idea. There's no secret of who they are, but he said, I have higher product market fit with segment A. So if I stratify our growth with segments in mind, we see consistent plateaus with that segment B. I think segment B growth suffers from some missing case and analysis management features, writing code in Monolith, which we were working on. We also market heavily to segment A, and thus segment B funnel suffers from this. Over time, we'll close both the marketing and product market fit gaps, and I think we'll see a lot more growth in segment B. So again, he's focusing on expanding into segment B rather than just turning them away. Depends on your space. Obviously, digital forensics is a market, but it's not as big as, you know, CRM or ESPs. So he's saying, I gotta dive into it. And the last one, I debated a little bit whether to include this, but when I first started compiling this, so I don't know if I said it at the beginning, but 3 years is what it took me to nail all these plateaus down. The Google Doc, I look back at the first entry I made, and it was from 3 years prior to 24. So it was like 2021 when I started putting it in. And what was happening 3 years prior to 2021? There were some one-time events that were rocking some SaaS. And so I had to include it. So one-time events can include things like, you know, you piss off your customer base. And I don't call it this, but I've heard some people call it pulling an intercom, which I thought was funny. It's basically raising your, you know, like raising your prices 4 times or whatever, not communicating that very well, which a company that I once owned and sold may have done that after I left. I can neither confirm nor deny. But angering your customer base is one thing, right, where people will start churning and you can see a plateau, or you just get such negative press that people, there's kind of a rumble in the market. You can have a major marketing setback. This is where, man, 80% of our leads come from SEO. And guess what Google did last week? You know, they just smacked you. And so suddenly, boom, you're plateaued, right? And then a black swan event, excuse me, like COVID, which is the one I was thinking of when I wrote this. So I don't actually have an example for this one. I mean, I just gave you 3 examples, but I don't have a example. In TinyCeed, when we were watching folks apply, there were some folks that were doubling every month and some folks that were basically going to zero during COVID. So the way you get around this is you basically apologize if you make your customer base mad, you try to fix it, you ride it out, Yeah, that's number seven. So what's interesting is there is an eighth with an asterisk that I built slides for, and I'll just mention it. I was going to wait for Q&A, but you know, we got 10 minutes. So the eighth one that I wasn't aware, I was not on my radar, to be honest, but it has an asterisk, is seasonality. And this is Jade from Glitch Secure said, we have a seasonal product. And what we notice is that we plateau, and I forget if it was during the summer or something, but they plateau every year at a certain time of year. That's not the plateaus I'm talking about. I don't know that there's a way to fix that, which is why I didn't include it in here, but I wanted, consider it an honorable mention. So in conclusion, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. No, in conclusion, one, two, three, and four are what I see as far more common than the bottom three, but I wanted to include them all. Yeah, and serious, if someone has encountered a plateau, whether you've gotten through it or not, that wasn't on this list, please ping me, because I do want to kind of have as much of a complete list before this winds up in a book somewhere. So that's it for me. Thank you so much for having me.